August 1619. 400 years ago this month, the first group of enslaved Africans was forcibly brought by British colonists to what is now the United States. In history books, the moment is often overlooked, despite being as central to our country's history as the Declaration of Independence or the drafting of the Constitution. And you've been telling us how slavery was taught when you were in school.
Hi, this is Nikki from San Francisco. I was taught that slaves were dregs in the fields, happy they had a master because they were unevolved, childish, needed guidance from. Also, the Civil War was about states' rights, not about whether people should be able to own, sell, or abuse other human beings because of the color of their skin. So as a black girl growing up in Tucson, it made me very angry and sad because I knew it was a lie.
Hi, this is Kathy calling from Dallas, Texas. In school, I was taught that the Civil War was originally about states' rights. It was more of a political action, the South wanting to secede from the North for political reasons.
This is Katie in Seattle. As the great-great-great-granddaughter of an abolitionist and the great-great-granddaughter of a Union soldier, I was always taught that slavery was perhaps our greatest sin ever committed in America. It was and always has been the real reason for the Civil War, no matter what anybody tries to argue. I'll be forever proud that my ancestors sheltered runaway slaves and fought for the freedom of every human.
Hi, this is Barry Wynn from Brighton, Michigan. In school, I was taught that slavery was a sad chapter of our country's history that was thankfully over. In my community, I learned that it was an unresolved chapter that still loomed large in our lives. I wanted to believe the former, but I had to face the truth of the latter.
The penetrating history of slavery in the United States is frequently ignored in our education system, and the failure to properly address its legacy continues to shape our world today. This week, the New York Times is aiming to correct the narrative with an expansive series of essays called The 1619 Project. I'm Tanzina Vega, and today on The Takeaway, we're looking at this anniversary through the lens of the three societal gaps at the core of our show's mission: the truth gap, the wealth gap, and the empathy gap. And we start with truth. What would a true reckoning with our history actually look like? And why does society seem to turn away from that idea? Dr. Ibram X. Kendi is the author of the new book, How to Be an Anti-Racist, and the director of the Anti-Racist Research and Policy Center at American University. Ibram, thanks for coming back on The Takeaway.
It's great to be on the show.
And Stephanie E. Jones-Rogers is an associate professor of history at the University of California, Berkeley. Stephanie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Tanzina.
So we're talking today to mark 400 years, which is an infamous anniversary, since slaves were first brought to what is now the United States. And it's kind of hard to imagine other events that are so historically significant being ignored, essentially, like this one has been. I mean, Ibram, what does that say about the country's relationship with its slaveholding past?
I think it says that America's trying to deny that relationship, to depress, to ignore, to shove into the closet, to imagine that this nation wasn't built, its wealth wasn't built on slavery. And I think that obviously, you know, any nation or any person who is denying and not seeking to acknowledge and recognize and talk about their own history, there's obviously a serious problem there.
Stephanie, your thoughts on that question, on the lack of historical acknowledgement of this moment right now?
So I think our nation's amnesia about slavery has a lot to do with how the story of America has and really has not been told. We often learn about slavery as an institution that was tangential to the founding of the nation, more like an inconvenient regime that had nothing to do with the founder's vision of the nation and its fledgling democracy. But when we teach people that slavery was unimportant to the nation, its founding principles, its laws, its economy, and its social order, why would you want to know more about it? You know, and I think this is key to this lack of understanding, lack of knowledge. And as you said, you know, this infamous anniversary, many people not knowing about it and not wanting to memorialize it and commemorate it. So I think that has a lot to do with it as well.
The two words that came to mind here were recognition of this date, but also a reckoning with slavery. And I'm wondering, I'd like to hear from both of you, what kind of recognition and by extension, what kind of reckoning should we be having as a nation on this day? Ibram.
I think that first and foremost, we should sort of recognize just how long slavery lasted in this country and the lingering sort of impact on this country. So to give an example, you know, obviously people who owned slaves were able to acquire, in many cases, a tremendous amount of wealth, wealth that has been passed on, wealth that still allows for a seismic racial wealth gap, which is growing in this country. And so there's so many different ways in which slavery and its history lives. And so to deny those connections is to deny how it is living and how we can solve those present problems that are the product of the past.
Stephanie, your thoughts. How do we recognize and also reckon with this moment?
Well, I think fundamentally we have to teach the narrative of American history, the American story, in a very different way, one in which African Americans are not, as Nicole Hannah-Jones of the New York Times said, inconvenient to the country's narrative. We need to teach it in a way wherein African Americans and their experiences in the United States, those experiences are fundamental to our national story, that they are key, as Professor Kendi said, key to understanding our economic development, our national development, our democratic development. So I think putting African-American experience at the center of the story of America is a way in which we can reckon with this amnesia, this slaveholding past, and begin to recognize how fundamental and important African-descended people are to this nation's history and narrative.
You know, Stephanie, when I think about the ways that we were educated, I was educated in a public school in an underfunded community in the Lower East Side of New York with fellow black and brown kids growing up. A lot of my education, I think, was limited. And I'm wondering if you can speak to some of the shortcomings around how we educate our children about not just American history, but American slavery.
Sure. I share that same kind of, I don't want to say ignorance, but this kind of lack of understanding and knowledge about the institution of slavery and how fundamental it was to the country. I didn't really begin to learn about slavery and all its particularities until college, which is, you know, it's egregious. And I think that continues to be the case for many students, many young students in the country today. You can see battles in places like Texas on how to talk about and how to frame slavery for younger audiences. But here at Berkeley, we have an initiative, and there are initiatives throughout the country that are trying to correct this, offer corrective, wherein we work directly with K through 12 teachers on different curricular endeavors. And slavery is a part of that, talking about the racial terror that exists and develops after slavery to kind of keep a subjugated class in place, a subjugated race in place. That's a fundamental part of the curricular activities that we engage in. So I think fostering a relationship between those who know this knowledge and those who impart this knowledge on young people is important. But I also think, again, that these wars, these kind of textbook wars, are also fundamental a fundamental problem. They lead to the kind of ignorance around this issue or lack of understanding of slavery. So I think that's also critical. So we need to get it into the textbooks and help to understand that framing it properly in textbooks and allowing for teachers to have access to this knowledge and understanding this knowledge is important to imparting it to younger generations.
Black slaves were not just denied their basic humanity, but even after slavery was abolished in the United States, Black Americans were denied their basic constitutional rights, and some would even argue that they still are in some ways. Ibram, how has that denial of humanity and denial of basic civil and human rights affected how Black people view their relationship within and with the United States?
Yeah, so, for instance, some time ago when four U.S. citizens who are also congresswomen of color were told publicly by the President of the United States and his supporters to go back to where they came from, it sort of caused me to remember that really from our arrival here 400 years, and certainly even from the time of the the end of the Civil War, that Black Americans have been arguing that question. Am I an American? And some Black Americans have said, indeed, I am an American. And because I'm American, I deserve my rights. I deserve to be treated like an American. I deserve to be recognized as human. While others have said, no, actually, we are not an American, because if we were Americans, we would actually have those rights. We would actually be free. And so someone like Malcolm X, who once said in 1964, I'm neither a Republican nor a Democrat nor an American, but got sense enough to know it. And Langston Hughes, who wrote in a poem, I too am American. So actually, Black people have been debating this for quite some time.
Stephanie, did the country come any closer to reckoning with this racist past with the election of President Obama, who himself was often not allowed to speak about racism?
I would say no. I see some really clear kind of connections between the Obama era. So when we elected President Barack Obama and his 8 years in office, and what happened immediately after slavery was abolished, what you have is this moment after slavery of great promise, of great hope. And so what you see is the emergence of large numbers of Black male voters, politically active African Americans, individuals who are entering office at the state level, at the local level, on the communal level. And what you see in response to that is an immediate, violent, and vitriolic backlash, white backlash. Similarly, you see that right after President Obama is elected. The Southern Poverty Law Center, for example, says that hate groups, white supremacist, white terrorist groups, increased 800% shortly after President Barack Obama was elected, and continue to increase since he was in office. And you see increasingly this kind of racial violence and terror throughout the country after President Donald Trump was elected. So I would say that, yes, while his election was a moment of promise and it symbolized our hope for a future that wasn't kind of tainted by our past, our racist past, what you see in the aftermath is an immediate white backlash. And many pundits, et cetera, have said that it's largely why we are seeing a Trump era. We have a Trump era in the first place.
You mentioned pundits. And Ibram, I'm curious about your thoughts on what role the media has played in some of these inadequacies of how we reckon or even recognize slavery and its long-term implications.
Well, obviously, when we talk about, as Professor Jones Rogers and I talks about people not being able to reckon with this past, we're talking about everyday people. And everyday people include members of the media, who, of course, went to the same schools we talked about earlier, were not taught about slavery. We're taught in some cases that the Civil War was about states' rights, or we're essentially taught myths about our past. And so as a result, as they go about doing their job, even if they're seeking to be well-meaning, that, of course, comes back. That affects them. I mean, even something as simple as classifying, writing the word in a story, writing the word racist in a story is very, very difficult for many journalists, even though, like all of the other words in their stories, it's found in the dictionary. It has a very clear definition, and we should use it when it applies, just like every other word. But somehow many members of the media have imagined that it's a political act when you objectively state that a person is saying something or doing something racist, when in fact it is not. It is using the definition and using words to describe reality, which should be the jobs of journalists.
Stephanie, what approaches can we or should we take about having an honest conversation about American slavery? And I want to add to that, how much of this is about educating white Americans about what happened, and also educating each other about the reality of what happened?
So I think one of the fundamental things that we need to do, as I referenced earlier, is place African-Americans' experiences in this nation at the center of the story of our nation and of American democracy. Because as I'll reference the 1619 Project again, many of those contributors argue that in order to really fully reckon with this past, you have to see African-Americans not as the problem, but as part of the solution. That's one of the things that Ms. Jones said in her piece. And we have, as she also argues, for 400 years seen African-Americans as a problem, as outside of our national narrative. But that, I think, one of the first things we need to do is to correct that view, correct that perspective, and to place them at the center of the story, and also to understand how significant their roles have been in the development of the democracy that we hold so dear, the ideals and principles of the Founding Fathers, and how they have forced us to reflect upon our hypocrisy in many respects. So part of that process must necessarily include discussions about slavery and understanding how very central slavery has been, not simply to the experiences of African Americans, but also to those of white Americans, Euro-descended Americans.
And Ibram, your thoughts on that. How do we, as a nation, get past not being able to talk about this and really have an honest conversation about what happened with American slavery?
I think first and foremost, we have to recognize that just because a story is a story of terror, as the story of slavery is, just because the story is the story of violence and rape, that doesn't mean within that story, that same story, we can't have stories of the building of culture. So what I'm saying is ultimately, just because the story is difficult to tell, the difficult to receive, just like in order to heal, we have to, of course, sometimes experience pain. We have to tell those difficult stories in order to look at our own current reality. Because in order to truly see and understand why there are so many disparities in our country today, why so many people demean and degrade Black people, we have to understand the story of slavery. And even to understand a question like, for instance, why did so many white women vote for Trump? You know, one of the books that allowed me to understand that was actually a book looking at the history of slavery. Professor Jones Rogers' new book, They Were Her Property, which talked about white women as slave owners and the ways in which white women actually benefited from this slaveholding enterprise as owners themselves, and the ways in which white women today are benefiting from white supremacy. So we have to be able to make those connections, because if we can understand the past, it will allow us to better understand the present.
Dr. Ibram X. Kendi is the author of the new book, How to Be an Anti-Racist, and the director of the Anti-Racist Research and Policy Center at American University. And Stephanie E. Jones Rogers is an associate professor of history at the University of California, Berkeley. Thank you both.
Thank you so much, Tanzina.
Thank you.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.